Welcome to the Curing with Sound podcast, brought to you by the Focus Ultrasound Foundation. I'm your host, Allison Preston-Smith, the media manager at the Focus Ultrasound Foundation. In today's episode, we are highlighting Dr. Jessica Foley. Jessica is the chief scientific officer and a managing director at the Focus Ultrasound Foundation. She holds a Bachelor of Science in Biomedical Engineering from Duke University and a PhD in Bioengineering from the University of Washington, with an emphasis in focus ultrasound. She has numerous publications, patents, and presentations at academic conferences in the field of focus ultrasound. Welcome to the show, Jessica.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So let's start at the beginning. What got you interested in the biomedical field?
Well, I think I was always, from the time I was young, interested in math and science and excelled in those in school, but was just really, really interested in those subject areas. My dad happened to be an engineer. I had a lot of engineers in my family, so that probably helped there. But I was just really interested in, you know, how can you use math and science, those interests, and help people. And I think I just, you know, gravitated towards medicine as a way of doing that because, you know, you see it in TV shows, you learn about that. We all have gone to the doctor. I probably had good experiences with doctors when I was young. And so I just always sort of thought about the medical field as a place for me. And it wasn't until I was in my undergraduate studies at Duke that I realized that engineering, rather than just straight up medical school, was a way to really impact lives in a, you know, positive way. And that was when I really got interested in biomedical engineering. And then I started doing research very early on, probably after my sophomore year of undergrad. I started doing research back at home over the summer, doing some cancer research. And then for the next couple of years, I was doing biomedical engineering research in the ultrasound imaging area. So I think once I really started getting into that research realm and having those experiences in the lab, directly kind of seeing how that could be beneficial to patients someday, that was, I think, an eye-opening experience as well.
So that leads into the next question of, when did you first learn about focus ultrasound technology?
Yeah, well, that was probably towards the end of my undergraduate time at Duke. I had been doing ultrasound imaging. I was working in an ultrasound transducer lab for a couple of years. And there we were developing ultrasound transducers to be used for imaging the heart. And that was interesting and it was a good experience, but I was more interested in therapeutic applications in general. And when I was considering graduate school and thinking about where I wanted to apply for graduate school, I talked to my advisor whose lab I was working in, and he said, well, you know, if you're interested in therapy, there's this whole field of therapeutic ultrasound, and you may want to consider the University of Washington because they're one of the leaders in this area. And so then that got me to explore on their website what they were doing at the University of Washington and in therapeutic ultrasound, which was broader than just focused ultrasound. But it was my first understanding that there was this world of using ultrasound beyond the imaging world. And so that was pretty exciting. And then when I applied to the University of Washington, and then went out there for a recruiting visit, I really got to learn a lot more about what they were doing in focused ultrasound.
And then in 2011, you had a really unique experience. You served as a fellow for the American Association for the Advancement of Science, which is a really prestigious opportunity. Can you tell us more about what that experience was like and what you learned, and if you focused more on research in that experience?
I got interested in science policy broadly, probably not long after leaving graduate school. And it was just something that I wasn't aware of. And I learned that there was this field of science policy and that this fellowship existed. But it wasn't until several years later that I actually decided to kind of take the plunge and apply for the fellowship. And I just had this passion for, you know, how can I use my background and my training in a more public serving capacity. You know, we have all these challenges in our world and our country, and I think that I could help in solving some of these problems. And so I applied for that, for the fellowship, and was fortunate enough to get selected, and then, you know, moved to the Washington, D.C. area to embark on this new career, which at the time was a 1 or 2 year fellowship that then hopefully would lead to something else. But I didn't really know what that something else would be. And I worked at the National Science Foundation. I worked in the engineering directorate, and they have a department in bioengineering in addition to other things. And so that was a really great experience that I still think is paying dividends as I'm still doing that kind of work now, but for the foundation. But I had met people from the foundation, including Dr. Cassell, the chairman of the foundation, when I was working at InsideTech, who is a focused ultrasound leader, pioneer in neurological disorders, but in a historically in a lot of different disorders. And having worked for InsideTech for 3 years and spending a lot of time, particularly at the University of Virginia, where they had a brain program, and I was helping to kind of get that program up and running and training neurosurgeons and being involved in essential tremor patient treatments and a variety of things. That whole time when I was at UVA, I got to know the foundation as well, being obviously such close neighbors and such close collaborators with UVA. And so then Dr. Cassell started, you know, pestering me a little bit about, maybe when you're done with your fellowship, think about joining the foundation. And so that started a whole, you know, new career.
And can you talk about your role at the foundation, what you do now?
Well, my role now is very multifaceted. I am the chief scientific officer. So we have more of a team of people helping to determine, you know, what are we going to fund? What are our priorities? And so doing a lot in that realm, I lead our cancer immunotherapy program and have led that program since its inception, actually helped to create that program back in 2015. So that continues to be a big part of what I'm doing. But then one way that the role has sort of evolved is taking on more in the advocacy and government affairs space, which was something that I, like I mentioned, have been interested for a long time. And when I joined the foundation, I was doing a little bit of that, but technology wasn't quite at the point where there was a lot of advocacy to be done, right? I mean, you can always talk about trying to get funding for focused ultrasound, or you can talk to government agencies to see, are they funding things? But in terms of really thinking about policies that could impact the field more widespread or more broadly, what are the barriers to bringing this technology, these treatments to patients in a open, kind of an equitable way? You know, those were things we could talk about, but the technology wasn't quite there yet. There weren't that many treatments that were approved by the FDA. You could theoretically talk about, oh, there's all this great stuff coming down the pipeline. We need to be ready. But that it's hard when you're trying to talk to policymakers in particular, and something is just very, you know, vague, or you don't have those stories, those patient stories that you can tell. And so I think the more that the technology has evolved, the more stories we have to tell, both good and frustrating, right? I mean, we use those to help people understand how that's a burden that, you know, is definitely not equitable, because some people can pay for that, some people can't, you know. So those, I think now we're really more at a stage with this technology where advocacy makes more sense, and we can actually get more done there. And so that has kind of evolved into a bigger part of what I do. And again, that's something that I've been really passionate about, and then have just been able to drive it so that now it's paying some modest dividends, but I think we're moving in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like that area will definitely become more and more important, like you said, as we have more FDA approvals and as we find other conditions where focus ultrasound can be utilized. I'm sure it's going to continue to grow. So looking back through your career, are there any highlights or any moments that really stand out to you, or anything that you're particularly proud of?
Well, I think one thing that definitely stands out, it's a bit of a, you know, full circle moment, is that when I was at Insightech and I was helping to get our brain program, our neurological disorders program, started in the US, I mentioned that I spent a lot of time at the University of Virginia and was training the neurosurgeons there how to use the device. At that time, there had only been, you know, less than probably 20 patients treated in the world using this device in the brain. And UVA was starting this new study in essential tremor, which was huge for patients, for the company, for the field. I was able to be in the room sitting right next to the neurosurgeon, who's Dr. Jeff Elias at UVA, sort of walking him through the study, when to apply the ultrasound energy, all of that. And I was there for the first few patients doing that, the first few patients that were treated in the world in essential tremor. And now being involved still, but from a different side, from the foundation side, who actually the foundation helped to fund that initial study. And knowing now that I was there for the first few patients, and now there have been over 10,000 patients treated with tremor throughout the world, that's something that is pretty remarkable to have happened, I think, in just over a decade. That's something that I'm very proud of. And it also is just kind of an interesting trajectory for looking at how my career has evolved, but yet I've had some of those threads that have gone throughout the career. So that's one thing that definitely stands out in my mind.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible that you are there in the room watching this happen with the very first patients. And now thousands of people have been treated for essential tremor. And there's so many updates in using focus ultrasound for patients experiencing that. That's just incredible. So what excites you about the future of focus ultrasound and its future applications?
Well, for me, what has been exciting over the last several years in focus ultrasound is really witnessing the evolution of the technology to one that is very versatile in terms of how the ultrasound energy can interact with tissue. So there have been all of these, we call them biomechanisms, studied for years, but now more of those are moving into the clinic. And so for years, the only clinical applications of focused ultrasound were really using the ultrasound for targeted heating to, you know, in most cases, destroy disease cells. But now that we have these clinical trials where we're seeing the ultrasound being used to enhance drug delivery, to induce an anti-cancer immune response, neuromodulation, where we might be using low intensities of focused ultrasound, pulsing it in a way that we can treat depression or anxiety or substance use disorder. You know, these are all really exciting applications. And I think, you know, when I was back in graduate school at the scientific level, we were always studying that sort of thing. Like, what can we do? And in fact, my PhD dissertation research was around neuromodulation, but in the peripheral nervous system for potentially treating things like pain and muscle spasticity. You know, at the time, there weren't many people doing that, and there hadn't been a lot done in it. And now it's a big growing field, you know? And so I think that's what's really exciting, is how versatile the technology can be. So when you're thinking about how it could treat cancer, for instance, it could do it in so many different ways. It can, in fact, be a non-invasive alternative to surgery and again, get rid of tumor cells and, you know, a localized tumor. But then you could apply it with an immunotherapy and you could get an immune response that could treat metastatic disease. Or you could use it in combination with microbubbles to open the blood-brain barrier and enable drugs to get in that are ordinarily not able to get into the brain or into the tumor, and treat things like glioblastoma or aggressive malignant childhood brain tumors. There's a lot of really exciting things there. And so for me, when I think about the future, it's sort of this world beyond ablation. So beyond that thermal ablation, with some of these combination therapies, really combination with the drugs or other biotechnology type solutions to treat diseases that are currently really, really difficult to treat.
So what are some of the main challenges in getting focus ultrasound widely adopted?
Well, there are, you know, there are several. So, I mean, obviously, when those of us who know about this technology and see all that, you know, understand all that it's done already to kind of revolutionize treatment for patients would think, why doesn't everyone know about this? Why can't all patients have access to it? But it's not very widely known. And so if you would go to your doctor and ask them about the treatment, chances are they haven't heard about it. There are some conditions, I think some of the ones that have been FDA approved for a while, like essential tremor or like uterine fibroids, but you may not have access to it even if your doctor knows what it is. And in some cases, that's why a lot of doctors don't even bring it up to their patients, because if it's not, you know, if they don't think it's going to be covered by insurance, or they don't have access to the equipment at their hospital or someone that they work with, then they're not going to bring it up necessarily to them. And so I think the challenge is, one, just raising the awareness of it, that it's not very widely known, and then getting it available, you know, around the country, around the world. Right now, it's still mostly available in, you know, large academic medical centers. A lot of patients, that's not where they get their care. They may not live nearby. And so that creates a hurdle for them to actually then have access to the treatment. And then I alluded to the insurance. Many of these treatments are, or they might be approved by the FDA or other regulatory bodies, but they're not covered by insurance yet. And so that is now going to be a huge impediment to patients, who most patients can't afford to pay out of pocket for something that may cost tens of thousands of dollars. So that's not a reality for them without insurance. So those are some of the big challenges, I think, just for these treatments that are out there now, is really how do we get to a point where every patient everywhere has access to these treatments. And then, of course, you know, there's still a lot that needs to be done in the research space to, you know, I've talked about innovative uses of focused ultrasound for enhancing an immune response to cancer, or enabling drug delivery that is more precise and localized and with having fewer side effects than current chemotherapies, for instance. All of those things are going to require a lot more research, a lot more research funding, either by the government or through companies. And so really having kind of a robust environment ecosystem for focus ultrasound, where that research is able to occur and it's able to then translate into new companies or new products at existing companies, and then get out there and get through that pipeline, so that it gets out there to the clinic and then to patients more widely.
And then one last question. You've spoken on several other podcasts about the importance of women in the biomedical field, and currently only 34% of the science and engineering workforce is made up of women. So what has your experience been like as a woman in the biotech field?
In biomedical engineering, I would say, has fairly good ratio in terms of men to women when you're just in still that education stage or undergrad stage. In fact, there may even be a larger percentage of women slightly than men. Then when you move into graduate school, you start to see fewer women, but there's still a pretty good ratio. But then the further up you get in academia is when you really see fewer women. So I think what I definitely noticed is that I may have been surrounded by a lot of women in my biomedical engineering classes, but we didn't have many professors who were women. And now I think there are certain departments across the country where they're doing a much better job at getting more diversity and equity in their faculty. But that's still a challenge, something that I noticed. And then, of course, once I got into industry, again, sort of noticing, you know, I may be in a field where versus, say, electrical engineering, you're going to see more women in the biomedical spaces. But again, as you go up in the hierarchy of the organization, that's where you see fewer women. We're talking about this topic a lot more. So I just think it's obviously important to continue to have these discussions. And, you know, I'm hopeful that we will reach a point where we don't have to have these discussions anymore, but we haven't gotten there yet.
Do you have any advice for the next generation of women who, you know, maybe in undergrad or graduate school right now?
Well, I think just, you know, following your passions, following your interests. And if this is something that you are interested in, then don't be discouraged if you happen to sit in a classroom and don't see a lot of people that look like you. You know, so long as you're interested in this, I think you should stick with it. I mean, I think unfortunately at an even younger point than college, of course, there are a lot of women and girls that are interested in science and math and get discouraged somewhere along the way. So hopefully I think they could find someone that can help them as they're moving through the process. But that's the best advice I could give at this point.
Is there any way for anyone listening who is involved in this space or wants to learn more or wants to come alongside you in the foundation as an advocate for focused ultrasound technology, how can they help you and come alongside you?
Sure. We would definitely love any support we can get from anyone who's passionate. You can always reach out to me at jfoley@fussfoundation.org. And I would love to chat with you about your interest in focused ultrasound. If you're a patient who wants to share your story, if you're someone involved in the research space who has faced challenges and wants to, you know, figure out how to break down barriers for your own research or clinicians. And then just, you know, anyone who hears about focused ultrasound and thinks, you know, wow, why don't more people know about that? Or why aren't more people having access to that? Definitely feel free to reach out and would love to chat with you and learn your interests and figure out how we can work together to move things forward.
Well, thank you so much for talking to us. It's been so great learning more about your role here at the foundation, and a little bit about your background as well.
Thank you.